Blog Talk Radio.
Absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Hello, everyone, and welcome once again. It's 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you're talking to, or you're listening to, JT. And this is the Master Plan. As always, today we're going to be talking about fantasy football starts and sits. I'm going to run down every game we can possibly. Before that, let's listen to some Janis. Like you. Yes. That's some little Janis Joplin. That's back in the 60s. Flower child. She was a radical, very radical person, unfortunately, just like Jimi Hendrix. She passed away at a very young age of a drug overdose. That was a common occurrence with the type of things that were going on in that late 60s era. Anyway, like I said, I'm JT. A.K.A. The Master. This is The Master Plan. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. I'll run that to you again, 637-3220. The chat room is open. If you like a question, comment, statement, whatever, in the chat room, we can do that also because it's open for you and only for you. Any way to get the information out there for you, we do that because that's how we roll here. Anyway, the other thing I wanted to talk about first, I've been asked a few times from friends and associates, what did I think about the presidential debate? Now, I'm just going to comment on the debate itself. I'm not going to comment on any kind of points that each candidate made. I'm just going to comment on the presidential debate. One of the things that I can make an analogy of, we're talking about football today, so I'm going to make an analogy in a football sense or a boxing sense, one or the other. You take it as you want to. When a champion comes to the fight with a contender, he's got to be ready for anything. He's got to be able to come to the challenge that's going to be put on him, because the champion's got a lot to lose and the challenger has nothing to lose. So he's going to go balls to the wall, try to do anything and everything to dethrone the champion. So the champion's got to be ready for that, got to be prepared for that. Well, that's my analogy of what I saw when I watched the debate. I didn't watch it on Wednesday. I DVR'd it so I could watch it at a later date when I had the time. This morning, I made specifically sure I had the time to watch the whole thing without interruption. I watched it from start to finish. And I must say, I would say I'm impressed, but I must say that the president has to come prepared and be willing to get into a knockdown, throwdown fight with the challenger. Because the fact is, the challenger, coming out of this, has nothing but more confidence in himself that he can handle himself in front of the president and in front of a national stage in a debate. So the champion, meaning the president, has to come like he wants to keep the office, not think like he's privileged to keep the office because he's the president. He's got to come like he wants this office, and he'll get in the down and dirty with the challenger in order to keep the office. That's all I have to say with it, okay? I spent a couple minutes on it. That's all I'm going to do on it. I'm not going to elaborate on talking points, the debate points that each of these candidates made. That's not what my whole intent on bringing this thing up. I just did a observation of what I saw in the debate and the debate itself. So that's what I have to say about that. Now, let's get to the real business at hand, what really counts in here. I want to win you some people some money. I want to win people, I want to win you some money. If you're in leagues that pay to play, I want to win you some money. So let's get down to business. Let's start off this way first. Let's start off with the Dolphins at the Bengals. I think this is going to be I wouldn't say a tough challenge for Mr. Tannehill. The Bengals have been playing better defense of late, but Ryan Tannehill has been afforded himself pretty well, especially in the last few games. He's been playing not too bad, and I think against this Cincinnati defense, I think he'll be able to do a few things, he's looking like the first game he threw for over 200 yards. The second game he threw exactly 200 yards. The last game against the Jets, he threw for almost 200 yards. So let me put it this way. Every other game has been a bad game, and every other game has been a good game. Last game, supposedly against a hostile environment, against a up until that point, a stout defense being the Arizona Cardinals, who just came off a win against the New England Patriots. He threw for over 400 yards, but he only threw for one touchdown. All right, now he's on the road for the second time. This is the first time they have a back-to-back road game. He's going to play in Cincinnati. I think Mr. Tannehill is not going to be doing that well. I think he'll be able to throw for a little over 200 yards. I wouldn't use him as that. I think that they're going to try to use their bell cow, per se, meaning Reggie Bush, who I think is going to get about 70, 75 yards. He'll probably get in for a touchdown because the Bengals can be run on. I wouldn't even think about Daniel Thomas or Lamar Miller. Don't even think about that. Reggie Bush, I think, right now is about an RB2. Possibly a flex in that realm. Brian Hartline was outrageous last week. Outrageous. Set a record last week for over 245 yards, and I think a couple touchdowns. He is Ryan Tannehill's main target. I like Brian Hartline. I have him on one of my squads. I use him as one of my wide receivers. It's a two wide receiver roster or a starting lineup, so I'm putting him in there. And I like Brian Hartline to get about five catches, about 80 to 90 yards. And that one touchdown, it may go to Brian Hartline. Now, don't discount Devon Best. Devon Best is a wide receiver 3. He could be used as a flex because there's a strong possibility, due to the team on the other side of the ball, that they'll be throwing a lot. So Devon Best is probably a wide receiver 3, 4, flex, somewhere around there. I see him getting about 4 to 5 catches, 50 to 60 yards. I don't know if he's going to get into the end zone. If anyone else gets into the end zone, it would be either Brian Hartline or Reggie Bush. I think one of those two, or a combination of both of them, get into the end zone. On the other side of the ball, Andy Dalton has been playing lights out. He's been playing lights out in there. I got a call in here. Hold on. Let me bring this caller. Caller from the 202, welcome to the Master Plan. State your name and tell me what you got to say.
Well, this is Black the Bookie, fresh off of vacation, and I have a question. Why is Brian Hotline more productive than Andre Johnson and Dez Bryant combined?
Well, because this is the reason. On the Texans side, their MO is to run the ball. Their main MO is to run the ball and then think about throwing secondary. Now, the reason why Andre Johnson hasn't been targeted as much, he's the main target, but he hasn't been targeted as much, is because the teams that they've been playing, they've been able to run on him for the most part and not have to rely at that much on the pass. But I wouldn't give up on Andre Johnson. Not at all, because Matt Schaub has been pretty productive, and quite naturally, you know, he looks for Andre Johnson. Brian Hartline is two weapons in Miami. Brian Hartline and Reggie Bush. That's it. And Reggie Bush is not even close to the runner that Aaron Forster is. Plus the fact is Miami doesn't have a defense like Houston does. So that means the defense gives up points. That means the offense has to throw more. That means Brian Hartline is going to get more targets. Houston hasn't had to deal with that in the first four games from coming from behind for any great length, so they don't have to throw the ball as much. So you don't have to go. Andre Johnson doesn't have to have as many targets, even though he does get the majority of the targets. Dez Bryant, I don't know what to tell you, Dez Bryant. He drops a lot of balls, for one. He runs wrong routes, causes Tony Romo to throw interceptions, which is a problem, and that causes Tony Romo not to throw to Dez Bryant because he doesn't want to take the chance of him not being where he's supposed to be. But the fact is, if he's not where he's supposed to be and along with drops, quite naturally, he doesn't get any opportunities to catch any touchdown passes. I think it's either six or seven games straight he hasn't scored a touchdown. Am I right about that?
You are correct, and I'm suffering because of it. Him and his fullback running mate over there in Houston, Andre Johnson. I hate these guys. I can't believe that I have Brian Hotline as the number one receiver today. It's unfathomable, man. I don't understand. I just don't understand.
I just laid it out to you that the Miami falls behind quicker than Houston does. I don't think Houston's falling behind substantially in any of the first four games they played, so there's no need for them to throw or panic to throw the ball to Andre Johnson. They throw it to move the chains so Arian Foster can run, but they don't do it out of necessity. Let me put it that way, like Miami has to because they don't have the offensive weapons. Or like Dallas has, because Dallas on the other side of the ball they have Miles Austin, who that's the wide receiver I really like. I've never really liked Dez Bryant because of the fact he's undisciplined. And since I got you on here, and I know you're a Dallas Cowboy fan, I talked yesterday about Dez Bryant, and I'm gonna pose this question to you: what do you think about taking Dez Bryant out of the starting lineup and just making him a punt returner for whatever amount of time until he gets his act together? What do you think about that?
I would have to say, who would I be our other receiver? Would he just throw Ogletree into the starting lineup? That's not going to work. We got to leave
Okay.
Dez out there.
Yeah, but don't you think it's a problem with the other starters on that lineup, that they know that Dez is Jerry Jones's pet, and that no matter what he does, he's going to stay in the starting lineup, even though it's hurting the offense, causing Tony Romo to throw interceptions, dropping passes.
You answered your own question right there. He's Jerry's pet. It's Jerry's team. Jerry does what he wants to do, and you see the Cowboys suffer from it.
Well, let me put it this way. You put yourself in Jerry Jones' shoes. You are now
I hate to do that. I hate to do that. I'd rather put myself in Roger Goodell's shoes than Jerry Jones' shoes.
No. You're a Jerry Jones fan. I know you are. So I'm gonna say, Jerry, you're gonna step aside. Black Wright is now the owner and operator of the Dallas Cowboys. He's going to run the show. Since you're running the show, what would you do with Dez Bryant?
Oh, I'm going to make a special trip to wherever Bill Parcells is, and I'll bring Bill Parcells back into the fold, and then let Bill Parcells handle it. If we need a GM, and that's the first thing I would do if Black Wright was there operating the franchise. Dude.
Well, see,
I'd make amends with Bill Parcells. I even make amends with Jimmy Johnson. I need help. I seriously need help, and I'm not afraid to admit it.
Okay, but you're skirting the issue here. The issue is the question I'm getting
me,
is
I can't possibly be skirting the issue.
Absolutely.
If I'm Jerry Jones, I'm going to be real Jerry Jones, and I'm screaming for help. All these moves you see is just a cry for help.
Okay, this is what I'm trying to get to, Black. This is what I'm trying to get to. I'm trying to get to you to give me a firm answer on what you would do with Dez Bryant.
I see his body of work
for the last few years.
I put him at kick return. I put him at punt return. I make sure I get every last dollar drop out of Dez Bryant that I can.
So you wouldn't have him at wide receiver? Is that what you're saying?
I might have moved him to a slot receiver. I might have moved him to the third receiver, but I don't trust Ogletree being the second receiver.
Well, you don't trust Ogletree. So you even though Ogletree may be a better route runner than Dez Bryant, that you may be able to rely more on Ogletree to be where he's supposed to be, even though Ogletree sometimes is shaky with his hands. You would rather put up with the interceptions that Dez Bryant has a habit of causing Tony Romo?
Well, first off, let's not put all this on Dez Bryant. We have a suspect quarterback back there, too, named Tony Romo. So it can't be all Dez's fault.
I understand that. But from what I watched last game,
I have no better alternative but to leave Dez Bryant in the starting lineup.
Well, that's demoralizing to your offense, you know, because you got a quarterback out there that pretty much throws his hands up every time Dez Bryant goes out there and runs the wrong route or doesn't read what the defense is doing. And causes Tony Romo to throw to one spot where he should be, versus where the spot Dez is actually at, and then Dez got that deer in the headlights look, and then you see the same thing you saw last week. Tony Romo face to face with Dez Bryant, trying to explain to him where he should be or what he should be doing, and that's a weekly occurrence that shouldn't be happening at this point in time in that wide receiver's development. Shouldn't be happening. He should be. He's got a curfew at 12 midnight. He should be spending the time looking at film and understanding where he's supposed to be, when he's supposed to be there.
My best Steve Spurrier voice. Well, 5-11. It's not too good. It's not too bad.
That's how I see Dez Bryant and Andre Johnson. You're stuck. I have Dez Bryant.
I'm stuck. They're killing me in the money league. I can't believe I'm tired with Joe and Ricky sitting at 1-3. This is just amazing.
Don't feel bad. I may be coming down that way soon. So don't look good. It doesn't look good for me. Too good for me today after a 3-0 start. I may be 3-2 after 5 weeks, but that's okay. I'm 0-4 in the league I won a championship in last year.
Oh, man. I feel like the guys in the league, I know you still haven't watched that yet, but, oh, brother, I'm having a rough go in every league you can imagine. Guys are just simply not performing, and I don't understand.
I don't. Yeah. Well, you draft him high. You got to stick with him up until a certain point, unless you can. You think of a trade, and you try to trade him off.
I'm having a fire sale in all leagues.
Well, you know, hey, I told you, I'll be glad to take Andre off your hands. You just got to come down on your price. That's all.
Is a starting running back for a starting running back. I mean, I don't understand. Andre Johnson should have a dual designation now as a running back and a wide receiver.
Oh, stop. Can't be that bad. Anyway, let me get back to what I was talking about. I'm running down the games, and I just happened to be the first game I'm on, and I'm going to be running way over
let
now.
Me,
I can see
let
that.
Let me tell you something. If Brown Hotline goes to two TDs a day, I'll be sick. Because there's a guy off the waiver wire, and guys that I drafted are doing absolutely nothing.
Well, Black, let me tell you something. Let me tell you what I did last week. I picked Brian Hartline off the waiver wire and put him on my bench. Just sat him there. Sat him there, right? Had him go off for 40-something points according to my settings in that league, right?
Oh, my goodness.
Wait a minute now. And on my same roster, I had Chris Johnson on my same roster, and he was sitting on the bench. And wait a minute. I lost to my opponent by the total of 4 points. Now, how thick am I? I was 3-0. I was 2-1. Wait a minute. I'm 2-2 now. No, I was. I'm 2-2 now. I was 2-1 last week, and I could have moved up substantially because we're pretty close in the wins and losses in this league. It's a 14-team league, and I lost by a total of 4 points. I just made a trade and got Chris Johnson before last week, just before the game started last week, and had him in my lineup. And after I got off my show, I decided to take him out of my lineup. Now, if I had just made one of those moves, put Brian Hartline in there, or Chris Johnson, because I had just traded for, which I had been working on this trade for this guy for 2 weeks. When I finally consummated the trade, I never put Chris Johnson in a lineup. How stupid is that?
Oh,
how stupid,
man.
That's got to be. And I wrote on the message board, I said, this has got to be one of the biggest boneheaded plays moves I've ever made in fantasy football. I put it on a message board in the league because I couldn't believe I did it. This has got to be one of the biggest boneheaded moves I did in fantasy football, and I made a set. I said, it ain't going to happen again. I said, I couldn't believe I did that. All I had to do was put one of those guys in there. More than likely, I wouldn't put Brian Hartline in. I put him in because I figured he's going to be decent, maybe a flex or something like that. But I had Chris Johnson in, and I second-guessed myself, which I don't normally did, and I did it then. And I'll never do that. I shouldn't say never, but I'll try to prevent from doing that again, the second-guessing yourself. That's a tidbit of people. Even I, which I pride myself on being able to put the max lineup in, even I second-guessed myself, and it shouldn't have. And it cost me a freaking win. So,
wow, that's amazing. I mean, how you trade for a guy to leave him on the bench? Ridiculous.
Yeah, I left him on the bench. And I worked on this guy for 2 weeks to get Chris Johnson. And quite naturally, I second-guessed it because he was going against Houston. Okay, so I figured, well, Houston hasn't given up any yardage. I said, you know what? Everybody's discounting this guy and knocking him out. I said, you know what? That's when the time he's going to score up a whole bunch of points. And so I decided to put him in there. Then I changed my mind, like I said, after I got off Sunday's show, saying, you know what? Houston ain't going to let him run all over the place. And what happens? His best point total in God knows how long. So, yep. So it happens to the best of us. So anyway, Cincinnati, we're talking to Miami at Cincinnati. Andy Dalton is a must play. He's going to have at least 250 yards in this game. And probably more about two touchdowns. Green that, Ellis
that
has
is a, that is another tricky scenario I had today. It's all those
What's
guys
that?
Have great matchups. Eli Manning, Christian Ponder, and Andy Dalton. If you're riding with those three guys, who do you roll with today?
Let's see. Andy Dalton, Christian Ponder.
Has a great matchup. Ponder also a
against,
great matchup.
He's playing home against Tennessee. Eli is playing home against Cleveland. And Andy Dalton's at home against all three of them are home against their opponent.
Exactly.
This is how I would rate him. I would rate him Eli Manning first, Andy Dalton second, Christian Ponder third. That's how it, because Andy Dalton has been playing his ass off. And I can't put him below Christian Ponder, even though Christian Ponder has been doing very well too. The reason I do it, Eli is a better quarterback than the other two. He's a Super Bowl MVP two times over, so I got to put him on the top of those three. Playing at home, and he's got a lot of weapons. Andy Dalton's got AJ Green, so I got to go roll that way with Andy Dalton. Christian Ponder is the one with the least amount. He's got Percy Harvin, who's a top five.
He just got Jerome Simpson back, though.
Yes.
Was a top receiver last week.
Yes, and when I get to that game, that's one of the players I'm going to highlight because I picked up Jerome Simpson in a few leagues. He was an afterthought because he was suspended for three games. But he's a big play receiver that they had a good rapport in preseason. And I do believe he, as the games go on, he's going to get more and more comfortable. Christian's going to get more and more comfortable with him, and he's going to have some big play ability. So I like Simpson a lot. Anyway, let me get to Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis. He's going to be about 100 yards. Miami's got a stiff run defense, but I still think he can get about 90 yards. Bengals should get close enough for him to probably get a rushing touchdown. Andy Dalton does like throwing to his tight end, but Miami's pretty good against the tight end. So I've only seen about three or four catches for Jermaine Gresham, maybe about 40 yards. AJ Green is the man here. I see him getting about seven catches, about 100 yards. I see him getting into the end zone. The real sleeper in here is, and this guy's been coming on, and he's been performing well. He's a big play guy, big yak guy, yards after the catch. I'm talking about Andrew Hawkins. The thing about him, he's a big play guy. So he may get a big play, he may not get a big play in this game. I see about 4 yards, excuse me, four receptions, about 45, 50 yards in this. I don't know about getting into the end zone for him. He's, like I said, he's a big play guy. Let's move to who I feel is going to be a shootout. I really believe this. Other people are probably picking it to be a closer game. Well, not a closer game, but I wouldn't say a low-scoring game, but the Packers overwhelmed the Colts. I think both these teams are going to be able to throw on each other. Packers have gotten stiffer on the run. So I don't think the Colts, Donald Brown, who's really not a prolific runner in the first place, is going to be able to run the ball. Let me go on the Green Bay side first. Aaron Rodgers is going to be throwing over 300 yards. He's going to throw a couple touchdown passes in here. Cedric Benson is going to be able to run the ball. I see him getting a touchdown in here and also see him getting about 85 yards. Believe it or not, the Colts are pretty stingy getting fantasy points for the tight end. So I don't see Jermichael Finley getting into the end zone, but I do see it probably because they throw so much. Him getting about five receptions, about 40 to 50 yards, probably that's what I see. I don't see him getting into the end zone. I see Jordy Nelson probably being able to.
Is he still in the NFL, Jermichael Finley?
Yes, he's still in the NFL. Yes, he is. He has the tendency to get that type of brick hands too, dropping balls. But he's made some tough catches. So he's a feast or famine type of tight end. Hopefully, for the Packers' sake and for anybody who has him in fantasy football, he's a feast tight end this week versus a famine tight end. Jordy Nelson should have about 6 or 7 catches, about 80 yards. I see him catching a pass, touchdown pass, along with James Jones, who's subbing in for Greg Jennings, who's got a groin injury. He's not going to be playing today. He's out. So if James can catch the ball, because he has a case of not being able to catch the ball too, and being frustrating to Aaron Rodgers, he should get about 5 or 6 catches, about 60 yards. I see him getting a big play into the end zone also. And the wild card in this is Randall Cobb. They like to get him involved because of his big playability. He's a good flex, or wide receiver 3. I see him getting about, because they throw the ball a lot, and he spreads the ball around a lot. I see Randall Cobb being able to catch about 5 passes, about 50 yards. I'm not sure about him getting into the end zone. The other two, I'm almost can bank on them getting into the end zone, one or both of them getting into the end zone. On the other side, Andrew Luck, you know they're going to be playing from behind. You know Andrew Luck's going to be throwing the ball. He's going to be about 250 yards, at least 1 touchdown, maybe 2. Quite naturally, he's going to be throwing to Reggie Wayne, who's going to get the majority of the targets. Reggie Wayne, I say he's going to be about 6-7 catches, 75 yards, and a touchdown. Now, the wild card here is, and I like this guy, he's got a lot of speed. He had a real big day on week 3 before they went on the bye. I'm talking about T.Y. Hilton, the young wide receiver. I know Donnie Avery is taking Austin Collie's place on the other side. This guy is going to be probably be playing in the slot. And if you want to take a flyer on somebody, if you're looking to high risk, high reward type of guy, and you think this guy is a possibility, try T.Y. Hilton. I mean, you ain't got nothing to lose. If you don't have a better alternative, you can put him in here. They're going to be throwing a lot. And he had a huge day. They had a bye. They may incorporate him more into the offense. So that's how we roll with that one. Let's move on to the Ravens versus the Chiefs. Black, do you got any comments on that Colt?
Yes, T.Y. Hilton is greater than Andre Johnson and Dez Bryant combined.
Hey, I don't know what to tell you there. The next game. Now, I touted this guy big time beginning of the season because the offensive coordinator finally, somebody hit him upside his head and put some sense into his head and let this guy do his thing. I'm talking about Cam Cameron and the Baltimore Ravens letting Joe Flacco be able to get back there and throw the ball more, especially Torrey Smith. Joe Flacco against the Baltimore Ravens versus the Kansas City Chiefs in Kansas City, which is very tough place to play, regardless of what team you are. Kansas City is on pace to have 60 turnovers this year, set a record to have 60 turnovers. Right now, they played 4 games and they have 15 turnovers. If I'm not mistaken, Matt Castle's got 7 interceptions and 3 fumbles. He's got 10 of those 15 turnovers himself. That's crazy. Anyway, I see Flacco, 300 yards, somewhere in there. Definitely going to throw for 1 touchdown, possibly 2. I don't know where Eric Berry is. Maybe that ACL is totally not right, and the secondary is porous as hell. Kansas City's been playing from behind big time every game. I see Flacco throwing up a couple touchdowns, Ray Rice being able to run through that Kansas City defense, getting about 80 yards and a touchdown. Peter possibly getting a touchdown in his. I see him probably getting a touchdown because he's one of Flacco's favorite targets, getting about five or six catches, 50, 60 yards, and a touchdown. Torrey Smith, big play receiver, about four catches, 60, 70 yards. And one of those big plays probably go for a touchdown. Joe Flacco likes to throw deep to Torrey Smith, and he's becoming a better and better player as a wide receiver, not just running nine routes. He can do pretty much probably the whole route tree now. He's getting better in each game that I've seen him play. Matt Castle, sit him on the bench. Sit him far down on the bench as you possibly can. Don't even think about playing Matt Castle in this. Jamaal Charles should be able to run. The Baltimore defense has not been as stout against the run as it has in the past, especially with out there Terrell Suggs in there. Jamaal Charles should be able to get about 80 yards, maybe a touchdown in here.
Oh, tell me that Ravens.
Yeah.
Make me feel good. Can you change that statement around, please? Can you say Ravens are a great run defense and Jamaal Charles will absolutely see no yards today? I need you to make that type of statement.
I can't do it. The Ravens defense has not been as stout against the run as it's been before. It's an older defense, and you can run on the Ravens defense just like you can run on the Pittsburgh defense. So these guys on both those teams were defenses that you couldn't run on, but as they get older, those defenses can be run on, and Jamaal Charles, I do believe with his speed, can definitely run on this defense, and I'm hoping he does because I have him in a few of my leagues, and I need him to do that. Anyway, I see him getting at least one touchdown in here. The only thing Matt Castle is good for is throwing to Dwayne Bowe, who's having a very good year. I see Dwayne Bowe being able to get about 6-7 catches, about 80 yards, maybe a touchdown in here.
Let me just say that Matt Castle is the greatest Kevin Cobb impersonator I've ever seen.
How did
you like Thursday night game?
Well, you know, that game was not Kevin Cobb's fault. That game was the offensive line of Arizona's fault. They could not. They were getting bull rushed. They got completely physically dominated by the defensive line of the St. Louis Cardinals.
In this NFL money pick'em league that I'm in is, I think it's a $2,000 pot this weekend. I'll tell you about 60 guys picked Arizona. So I'm feeling very good right now.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. All I can say is wow. Say, you know, that NFC West, all those defenses are tough, man. It's no cakewalk, especially if you come into their house. It's no cakewalk playing those defenses in their house. You're talking about San Francisco, Seattle, Arizona, and St. Louis. You walk into the house, you're in for a fight. You're in for a big fight. And I think a lot of teams, quite naturally, one of them, your Dallas Cowboys, found that out real quick, unfortunately. So, which was the weakness of the NFC, is now no longer the weakness of the NFC. So, that's all I have to say on that. Moving over to the Tennessee Titans versus the Minnesota Vikings.
Yes.
Matt Hasselbeck. Now, Minnesota has a very good pass rush, but I see Matt Hasselbeck throwing for about 250 yards. They don't have a good pass defense, meaning the back part of that defense relies on the front part to help them out greatly. So if they don't get to the quarterback, that leaves the backside of that Minnesota defense very vulnerable, and I think that Matt Hasselbeck can take advantage of that with Nate Washington and Kendall Wright. I'm not sure about Kenny Britt if he's playing or not because he has a problem with his ankle. I'm not sure about that yet. But Matt Hasselbeck, in my opinion, should get about 250 yards, probably at least one touchdown, and probably at least one pick, because Matt Hasselbeck is good for that, at least one pick. Chris Johnson, You know what? I went out on a limb last week, and I'm going out on a limb again. I know that Minnesota is one of the better run defenses going, just like Houston was. I think Chris Johnson is back, okay? I think Chris Johnson is going to be able to run on a Minnesota defense, use his speed, and I think the offensive line is going to be able to do something with the Minnesota defensive line. I think he's going to run for at least 70 yards, and I think he's going to get into the end zone, at least maybe a 20-yard run, not one of those 50, 60-yard runs, probably a 20-yard run, 15-yard run, something like that. I think these wide receivers flip a coin to who stands out in here. If Kenny Britt's not playing, Kendall Wright and especially Nate Washington are going to be leaned on heavily. And I think Kendall Wright's going to get about 5 or 6 catches and 60 yards and maybe along the same lines with late Nate Washington. But it's a toss-up. Who gets the touchdown? In fact, it could be Jared Cook, the tight end, who's probably going to get about 4 or 5 receptions. In fact, Minnesota is one of the worst teams to defend against the tight end. Jared Cook is going to play a big role in this. I see him getting about 4 to 5 catches, 50 to 60 yards, and if anyone gets into the end zone, it would be Jared Cook because of the way Minnesota's played defense against the tight end. That's a bold statement there. Anyway, Christian
Jared
Ponder.
Cook. Jared Cook, greater than Andre Johnson and Dez Bryant.
Christian Ponder against this one of the worst, I think they're the worst, if I'm not mistaken, worst pass defense in the league. I'm talking about Tennessee. Should have about 250 yards. He's going to probably throw for 2 touchdowns, 1 to Percy Harvin and a long one to Jerome Simpson. Maybe he'll do one of those backflips into the end zone or front flip, whatever you want to call him. I see Percy Harvin getting about 5 to 6 catches, 60 to 70 yards, and a touchdown. Jerome Simpson, I can't guarantee a touchdown here, but I think he's going to have like 4 or 5 catches and about 50 to 60 yards. And Kyle Rudolph, you know what? I predicted Kyle Rudolph would get a touchdown 2 weeks ago, and he got 2. I predict him he's going to get a touchdown in this game. 4 to 5 catches, about 40 to 50 yards, and a touchdown in this game. I like Kyle Rudolph a lot in this game. You got any comment on that, Black?
No, Kyle Rudolph, greater than Andre Johnson and Dez Bryant.
Oh, you know what? Before I go any further, I opened the show up talking about what took place on Wednesday, okay? Just on who I thought won versus who I thought lost on Wednesday. Not the substance, not what they were talking about, but the actual debate itself. You got any comment on who you thought won that and why?
I think Romney looked good. And I won't lie to you. I think Romney looked good. He was the better aggressor that night. My daughter's very upset about the Big Bird cancellation. She's starting a petition. She's trying to get all the kids to go to the polls to get Romney out of there because she was very unhappy with the Big Bird
decision. Is that right?
But yeah. My daughter Washington was upset. So I made my daughter happy.
Wow. Yeah, I was surprised he actually came out and said that. But
you're going to tell Jim Lehrer to his face, yeah, I like you, but I'm getting rid of you as well.
Yeah, yeah. That's unbelievable.
Ballsy, man.
Anyway, huh?
Ballsy.
Well, you know, I made this analogy earlier. I said.
But I did hit something foolish. One of the Democratic handlers tried to say that. The atmosphere was too high as if Obama was at Mile High Stadium, and that probably affected his performance. I don't care to hear anything foolish like that, but Romney
yeah,
was definitely the aggressor that night.
Well, you have to, I made an analogy when I first opened up the program that you have a champion, and you got a challenger. the champion's got the championship to lose, meaning the president. He's got the presidency to lose. The challenger, Mitt Romney, got nothing to lose. So he can go balls to the wall. He ain't got nothing to lose. So he can come out being that type of with that type of attitude, because if he doesn't, if he tries to play it low key, then he's on the same level as the president. You follow me? He's got to step it up a little bit more. So he's in a no lose type of situation versus what the president is. And on the other end, if you come to a championship fight, you got to come like the champion. You can't come like, well, you know, I'm the champion, and no matter what happens, I'm going to win this because I'm the champion. You got to fight for your championship. You just can't say, well, because I'm the champion, I got this. That ain't working, especially in this day and age, with all the eyes on you. Got to come like you want it. That's basically what I was saying. You got to come like you want it. You can't come like you just can't show up and expect it to be handed to you. You got to be wanting to have it. And I felt our president didn't do that. Hopefully he steps his game up. Hopefully his people step their game up and to get him to step his game up. We'll see what happens. Anyway, let's get back to football, something that really counts. Anyway, Atlanta at Washington. This is going to be lights out. Let me tell you something. I think both these teams are going to light the scoreboard up on this one. If you have any of these players in here, any relevant players in here, put them in your lineup, because I think they're going to be having a good fantasy day. We'll start on Matt Ryan, 270 yards, I think he's going to go for over 300 yards in this game, at least two touchdowns against this absolutely horrible pass defense in Washington. Absolutely. Even though the Atlanta Falcons don't play that well on the road, especially outdoors on grass, I still think they're going to light it up. Michael Turner's a different story. I don't see him, unless it's in close, within the five-yard line I'm talking about, I don't see him getting into the end zone. I see him having about 60, 70 yards. I don't see him getting into the end zone unless, like I said, it's within 5 yards. Tony Gonzalez is extremely relevant. He's the most targeted one on this team, if I'm not mistaken. 6 to 7 catches, 60 yards. He's going to get into the end zone. I see Roddy White getting into the end zone. About 6 catches, about 80 to 90 yards, and a touchdown. Welcome back to relevancy, Julio Jones. Last few weeks he had a laceration on his hand. He was ineffective. This is time for him to come back, especially against this defense. About six catches, about 70 yards, and we're going to see a Julio touchdown. That's all I can tell you. We're going to see a Julio touchdown in this.
Is he totally healed from that laceration?
He's 100% go, man, from what I understand. From what I've been reading, he's 100% go from his past couple of weeks that he was having problems with his hand. So I put Julio in all my lineups, which I've been doing for the last few weeks, but not getting any kind of good result from him. I have full confidence in Julio Jones today. Watch the Redskins. Robert Griffin III, he's going to throw for about 250, 275 yards. He's going to throw for at least a touchdown. I think he's going to throw a pick in here also. Alfred Morris, Atlanta's run defense is not that bad. So I guess it's probably average. I don't see Alfred Morris getting into the end zone. I really don't. I think he's going to get about 80 yards. A bonus would be getting into the end zone. Let me put it that way. If you got Fred Davis, excuse me, he's about 4 yards, maybe 50 yards. I mean, 4 receptions, maybe 50 yards. Leonard Hankerson and Pierre Garçon probably be going to get about 4 to 5 catches apiece. Griffin III is
like,
probably going.
I don't like Gasol. Gasol seems like an injury risk so far this season.
Well, from what I understand, he's healed up. He's healed. I wouldn't say completely healed, but you're right. He's one of these fragile wide receivers that when he's in there and he's healthy, he can make some plays. But the point is getting in there when he's healthy. That's the key. As far as I know, he's healthy now, or is that healthy he's going to be at the present time. I would put him in here as a flex at best, let me put it that way. Hankerson probably going to get more work. I would see him about 4 or 5 catches, about 50 to 60 yards. I see him getting into the end zone along with Griffin III, I neglected to say, probably rushing for a touchdown also. Let's move on to Browns versus the Giants. Now, I'm going to say this. Let's go to Cleveland first, a visitor. Brandon Whedon. I discounted this guy beginning of the season. Vic knows it very well. Discounted this guy just beginning of the season. This quarterback, has thrown for 300 yards twice in the last 4 weeks, week two and last week. He threw for over 300 yards against Baltimore, and he threw for over 300 yards against Cincinnati, two division rivals, okay? This is not a division rival. This is a team, and both of those 300 yards came on the road, okay, at Cincinnati and at Baltimore. Where is he at now? He's on the road against a Giant defense that does not defend the pass well. They have a good pass rush, just like Minnesota, but the backside of that does not defend the pass well. The problem is this. They have a wide receiver that even if you put Stickum on his hands, he couldn't catch the ball, meaning Greg Little. Whoa.
Greg Little? Greater than Andre Johnson and Dez Bryant.
Well, let me tell you, let me put it this way. Greg Little is hurting the team because of his drops. I mean, he's absolutely one of the worst wide receivers you could possibly have. He drops the ball constantly. Josh Cribbs is getting – I don't know if you knew this. Because Josh Cribbs is getting pressure from his family for him to quit football because of the hits he's taken and the concussions he's sustained, for one. I don't know if you know this or not. I'm trying to think of the guy's name.
He's in the job at that type of situation now?
Yes. Oh, Josh Cribbs is good friends with Jerome Harrison, okay? And Jerome Harrison is having all kinds of issues. He's having seizures and everything else. And it's not in a good way. And I think because of those circumstances, Josh Cribbs' family is trying to get him to quit football because they don't want the things that are happening to Jerome Harrison to happen to Josh Cribbs. So he's not playing in this game because of that. I'm trying to think of the other wide receivers that are not playing this game. Hold on a minute. I'll tell you in a minute who's not playing in this game. Josh Cribbs is not playing. Travis Benjamin is not playing. And Mohamed Masuqua is doubtful. So it only leaves really.
Who are they going to be throwing to?
Wait a minute. I'm telling you. Because I think this guy is going to emerge here. They have Greg Little on one side. And they have a rookie that they got from the supplemental draft. This is one of my sleepers for today. Giants are not a good pass defense. Brandon Whedon needs targets. So they're putting Josh Gordon, who the Cleveland Browns got from the supplemental draft, into the game. And I'm telling you, if you are hurting for a wide receiver, if you have an Andre Johnson that you do not want to play because you think he's a fullback versus or a run back versus a wide receiver, like some people I know, and you got nothing to lose, put Josh Gordon in there. I know this is a reach. This is a real reach. This is a real reach. But remember, you heard it here. Put Josh Gordon.
This is a back-breaking reach. But go ahead.
Yes, this is a real reach. I'm prefacing it by that, saying that this is a real reach. This is a master plan reach. Okay, I'm telling you. Put Josh Gordon in there, and I think you will be pleasantly rewarded. Let me put it that way. I'll put it that way. I think you'd be pleasantly rewarded, but understand this is extremely high risk, but understand it could be your extremely high reward. Every week there's always somebody from one of these teams that emerges and has a good day. I think in this game, in this particular circumstances, going against this defense, which is weak against the pass, on the back end, Josh Gordon will be a recipient of a lot of Brandon Whedon passes because they can't guarantee, or they can't trust Greg Little because he drops the ball too much. Anyway, on the other side, Eli Manning's going to throw for 300 yards here. He's going to get two touchdowns here. He's going to have a very good fantasy day. I like Eli Manning a lot in this game, especially at playing at home. Ahmad Bradshaw, he may have a so-so day today. 78 yards. He's like Michael Turner in this game to me. Within 5 yards, I think he'll be able to get a touchdown. If it's out of the 5 yard range, he's not going to be getting into the end zone. So that's how I preface that. Martellus Bennett has been one of Eli Manning's favorite targets. He's going to get about 4 or 5 catches, about 40 to 50 yards. If they get close, they'll definitely look Martellus Bennett's way. Victor Cruz is their big play guy. He's going to get about 6 to 7 catches, about 80 to 90 yards. If it's a big play, he'll get the touchdowns for that. Dominic Hixon takes over for Hakeem Nicks, who is out of this. Dominic Hixon is going to benefit from Eli Manning thrown his way because he's going to get the passes that Hakeem Nicks would normally get. He had a decent day last week. And he'll have another decent day this week. I see Dominic Hixon getting about, let me see, he's going to get here. I think he's going to get about 5 to 6 catches, maybe 50 to 60 yards, and I see him getting into the end zone. So he should have a decent day as the number 2 wide receiver for the New York Giants. Who you like in that game, Black? I know you probably like the Giants in that game to win, right?
Yeah, I like the Giants. Even though I think it won't be a cakewalk as you're expecting it to be, I think it'll be a tough game. The Giants always have that one game on the schedule every year where they're supposed to blow somebody out. But I think this will be a close game.
Okay. Here we go with this game. This game is... And I'm probably going to go up to game time trying to figure out who's going to win this game. Talking about the Philadelphia Eagles coming against Pittsburgh Steelers.
You and me both. I think that was the very last game I picked on my pick'em schedule. And I let Philly fans convince me to take Philly, so I'm hoping Philly does something.
Okay. We're going to be going over on overtime. For those who are going to be leaving us, I'll thank you for listening to the Master Plan. I'll be back here again 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Sunday morning next week. Also tune in on Tuesday to Compassion Dakini at 4 o'clock with Kim Fun. On Thursday, 8 o'clock, will be the FSP Cruise Show with me, Black, who's also on here right now, and Jeff the Joker. We talk about all the sports, especially the Thursday game that's coming up on the same night. And then Friday, we're talking about Mac Williams and myself on the show at No Chaser, which is at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And on Saturday, next week, I will be hosting the FSP show. Vic will be unavailable. So tune in for that because that's going to be a real good show compared to what it normally is with Vic as the host. Anyway, and Vic, if you listen to the archives, yeah, I said it. Anyway, with that being said, let's get back to the games. We're going to be going in overtime in about 10 seconds. So for those, like I said, who are going to stay with me, we'll have the rest of the picks. For those who are not, have a good fantasy day. Hopefully you win your fantasy game today. And we're over. All right, Philly versus Pittsburgh. Wow, what can I say about this game? I think this game is going to be Ben. You know what? I'll go on the Pittsburgh side first. Ben Roethlisberger has been having a very good year. Todd Haley, likes to throw the ball, even though their mantra this year was to run the ball. Their running backs haven't been running the ball that well. So what's the next best choice? To pass the ball. And Ben's been having a very good passing year so far. I see him throwing for about 260. 275, 300 yards. I see him throwing a couple of touchdown passes in the game. Rashad Mendenhall is coming back for the first time this year from an ACL. They're going to probably wean him in gently, especially against this run defense of Philly, who's pretty good.
I need heavy dose from Mendenhall today. Heavy dose.
Well, good luck.
I understand he's coming back from surgery, but. Come on, Mendenhall. I need you to go Mitt Romney on him. And, yeah, let's do the thing today.
He's got a tough road to hoe, man. I mean, he's coming back from an ACL, plus he's going against the Phillies' run defense, which hasn't been that bad this year.
But in his defense, he's been practicing for the past 2 weeks. So, hopefully, he's ready to absorb that contact. And can give me at least 8 fantasy points. I'll take that from him.
Well, you probably get that. I mean, he's going to have 50 to 60 yards, somewhere around there. Probably catch at least a pass or two. You probably get 8 points out of him. Depending on your point system, you'll probably be able to get 8 points out of him. Heath Miller has been a BFF for Roethlisberger. He's been throwing a lot to him. I see him getting about 4 to 5 catches, 50 to 60 yards. He likes throwing it to him in the end zone, and I see him doing that. These other two guys, these two wide receivers, are big play wide receivers. So if you're looking for big plays, that's where these come from. In close, they look for Heath Miller. So Antonio Brown, Mike Wallace, probably get the same amount of catches, 4 to 5 catches, probably the same amount of yards, about 60 to 80 yards, somewhere. I know that's a big gap, 60 to 80 yards. That's probably somewhere around it. One's going to get more than the other. I don't think they're exactly the same, but that's why I made it 60, 80 yards, because I think these guys are going to put the big plays into effect. And I see at least one of them getting into the end zone. It's a toss-up from week to week. Who does that? On the other side of the ball, Michael Vick, Troy Polamalu, and Jerome Harrison are back this week, and you can guarantee you – They got a bullseye on the whole body of Michael Vick, waiting for him to decide if he wants to run or not. So I don't know if you're going to get that many rushing yards from Mike Vick due to the fact is they want to lay a hurt on him. Unfortunately, I think he's going to at least throw a pick. He's going to have at least one touchdown, probably 250 yards, 260, somewhere around there. I think they're going to rely heavily, like they did last week, on LeSean McCoy. I see him getting about 80 yards. I do see him getting into the end zone. Brent Celek, Vic likes throwing to Brent Celek in the bailout mode. He's going to get about five catches, about 60 to 70 yards. Sean Jackson is their big play wide receiver. About 4 catches, about 60, 65 yards. And Jeremy Maclin, he's coming back from a hip injury. He's probably totally not healed, so I don't think he's going to be that much of a factor in this game. About 4 catches, 40, 45 yards. That's the max I can see out of him. Who do you like in this game, Black? I've been going back and forth this game for the longest.
I like Vic getting one touchdown, one fumble, one interception. I like how you got Vic filling up the stat sheet there. I'm kind of conflicted because I have Roethlisberger in one league and I have Vick in another league, so I actually need both guys to perform well. But like I said, at the end of the day, I'm really, being a Cowboy fan, I can't stand Pittsburgh, so I still have to roll with Philly.
Okay.
Even though I can't stand Philly either.
Okay. Let's move on to Seattle at Carolina. Russell Wilson is probably, I wouldn't say he's on a short leash, but I think Matt Bryant isn't totally healthy yet, and I think that's the only reason why Russell Wilson may not get replaced in this game. He's not a fan. Yeah.
You said Matty Bryant. I think that's the catcher.
Oh, I'm sorry, Matt Flynn. Yeah, Matt Flynn. Flynn. He's not.
What happened with Flynn? I mean, he was a guy that was propped up in Green Bay and just went to Minnesota, and now he's on the bench, right?
Supposedly he's got an elbow issue, which is probably totally not healed or whatever the case may be. It's been sketchy. All I know is that they have he's got an elbow problem. So that's probably the only reason why Wilson's still in there, even though it's only been four games. But he hasn't thrown for over 200 yards yet, if I'm not mistaken. So. He may throw for a touchdown in this game. I think they're going to rely heavily, like they've been doing, on Marshawn Lynch, about 90 to 100 yards against this Carolina run defense. If they get a touchdown, I think it's going to be Marshawn Lynch touchdown. Excuse me. I don't think any of these wide receivers are going to catch a pass in the end zone. Sidney Rice is probably the most targeted, but if you have a quarterback like Russell Wilson that is not that accurate, even though he does throw a decent deep ball, they have one of the worst pass offenses in the league, and I don't think Sidney Rice is going to get into the end zone. He's got probably a greater chance of getting to the end zone than anyone else. I see him getting about four catches, 55 yards. He's a wide receiver three at best, in a very bad situation. On the other side, Cam Newton hasn't been playing as well as he's been normally playing. I see him throwing a touchdown pass in here, but I don't know if it's Steve Smith going to catch it because Seattle's got a stiff pass defense. I'm looking at Greg Olsen possibly getting that touchdown. Cam Newton is going to be doing running for his life in this because Seattle's got a pretty good defense, and I don't think he's going to be able to pass the ball as well as he wants to. D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart, I don't think they're going to be able to run the ball. I think they're going to give about 45 yards in this game. Greg Olsen is probably the key in this game, probably five catches, 60, 70 yards, probably a touchdown. Steve Smith, probably get four to five catches, about 70 yards, and Brandon LaFell is going to be inconsequential in this game, about three catches.
I was going to say, that's the big question. Will there be a Brandon LaFell sighting in this game?
Seattle's got a good DBs, man. They got a good defense, and I don't think Brandon LaFell is going to be able. Maybe Steve Smith, the wily veteran, is going to be able to do it. But I don't know about Brandon LaFell, the young guy, is going to be able to deal with the DBs back there that will be able to. They're long and lean defensive backs, and I don't know if Brandon LaFell can deal with that. So I wouldn't expect too much from Brandon LaFell, even though they're playing at home. Who do you like in that game?
Oh, I'm going Carolina. Carolina at home, it's hard to pick against them at home. I'm going Carolina.
Okay. All right, we got Chicago Bears at Jacksonville Jaguars. Jacksonville's got one of the worst. I think they're the 32nd in overall pass offense and overall offense in the NFL. They're playing at home, which they usually play better at home. Chicago comes off a big win. A very good win against who did they play last? Chicago played who did Chicago play last? Oh my God, I can't remember.
Chicago played the Dallas Cowboys.
Yes, Chicago came off and played a big game against Dallas and won a big game. Let me see if they can come back on a short week.
Short week.
Second game on the road. And they're playing Jacksonville at home. if Jay Cutler can duplicate his performance. I don't think he can. I think he's going to throw for at least a touch, one interception. I think he's going to throw for a touchdown, but I think he's not going to have more than 250 yards in this game. I really believe that. Matt Forte may have a decent way to go. The second game back from coming off an injury, so he may be able to run a little bit better. I see him probably getting to the end zone. Brandon Marshall, Jade Cutler, BFF. He's probably going to have 6 or 7 catches, 85 yards, something like that. If he throws a touchdown pass, that's where I see it going to, Brandon Marshall. On the other side, do I really have to say on the other side? We're talking about Blaine Gabbert throwing to Laurent Robinson, Cecil Shorts, Justin Blackmon, and a little sprinkled in.
I don't even think Laurent Robinson's out for this game.
Is he out? Let me see. Is he out? Out. Yes, he's out. Okay, so he's thrown to Justin Blackmon and Cecil Shorts and some other no-name, whoever.
Yeah, I want to know who Justin Blackmon is because I haven't heard his name since the draft.
Stephen Ridley, Denver's got a pretty good rush defense. I don't think he's going to get over 70-80 yards because they may get in close with the offense. He may get in a touchdown. On the Ron Gutkowski, probably going to get one of those touchdowns. 6 or 7 catches, 70 yards. Wes Walker, it's definitely a possibility of getting one of those touchdowns. 6 catches, about 90 yards. They like throwing to Welker. Hernandez, I don't know if he's going to be playing or not. He's very close to playing. He's questionable with his ankle, but he's been practicing on a limited basis. So he may be inactive or he may be active or inactive. I don't have that information in front of me right now. Brandon Lloyd, loves this offense, loves Josh McDaniels, especially Brady loves throwing to Brandon Lloyd. I see him, this is the big play wide receiver, seven receptions, about 80 yards, and I see him getting a big play into the end zone.
What about Brandon Bolden?
Brandon Bolden, I don't think too much of him, man. I really don't. I mean, I think it's really job. Brandon Bolden, I think he's dealing with an ankle or groin, one or the other. He's dealing with a knee. So he's questionable. I don't see it. I don't see him doing anything substantial in this game. He's one of those plug and play guys. You know, you and put him in there. Like Belichick always does, put this guy in there, and we'll see what happens. And then next game, he disappears. You never see him again. He was a big waiver wire pickup, but for me, I never even thought about this guy because I know the source, Bill Belichick. So Steve Ridley is the reliable one here. But he had a sprinkle of Danny Woodhead and Brandon Bolden last week. So come on. That's just the Belichick way, regardless of who the offensive coordinator is. Belichick, he always seems to throw these type of guys in there just to screw up people who play fantasy. Anyway, who you like in that game, Black?
I like the Patriots.
Okay. Let's move over to this one. Buffalo Bills at the San Francisco 49ers. Okay, the San Francisco 49ers got their butt handed to them last week by the Minnesota Vikings in Minnesota. Now they're home. Now they're pissed off. Now they got
whoa. How could you just skip the wonderful performance of the 49ers in New York against the Jets?
Oh, that's right. You're right. You're exactly right. I'm 2 weeks behind. You're right.
Okay.
You thought you didn't think I was going to stop and catch that, right? Yeah, no, you're right. I'm 2 weeks behind. You're right. The San Francisco 49ers had a very good day against the New York Jets, but they scored most of their points on defense. That I must say that. They scored most of their points on defense. That the offense did not do that much on a day. The Jets handed a lot of those points to them via Mark Sanchez and company. So, and that's not discounting the 49ers or not trying to take up for the Jets. I'm just saying that's the reality of it, that the defense put up a lot of points for the San Francisco 49ers and it made the offense that much easier. So, Alex Smith, in this game, I don't think he's going to be doing too much. I think he's going to throw for at least one pass. He's not going to throw for a great amount of yardage. I think they're going to rely mainly on Frank Gore, I hope, because I just got Frank Gore in the trade. 80 yards, probably a touchdown. Vernon Davis, quite naturally, I think if they throw a pass, it's going to go to Vernon Davis for a touchdown pass. About five catches, 60 yards. Michael Crabtree's been a PPR machine. Let me put it this way. His staple, for the most part, is 6 to 7 catches, 60 to 70 yards. So that's reliable stuff that you can almost bank it on, that he's going to get about 6 to 7 catches and about 60 to 70 yards. It's up in the air, a coin toss if he gets into the end zone. The other two, Manningham and Moss, they're not worth mentioning because they don't do that much. Mario Manningham is probably going to get the most, probably three catches, about 40 yards, and Moss is going to get about two or three catches, about 20 to 30 yards. So if you're in dire need of a wide receiver, 3, 4, or 5, whatever, you can grab these guys and put them in there because they're just going to pick up the garbage, the scraps of whatever Vernon Davis and Crabtree don't get. I know you like the on the other side of the ball, Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to try maybe 250 yards, maybe get a touchdown in there. C.J. Spiller and Fred Jackson are supposed to be healthy. I don't know I don't think it's going to make a difference. These guys won't be able to run on that defense of San Francisco. Scott Chandler and Stevie Johnson are the only reliable passing options in here, and Scott Chandler is probably going to be close to what Stevie Johnson gets. Steve Johnson hasn't been doing that well recently, so he's only going to get about five catches, about 60, 65 yards, somewhere around there. Chandler, it's going to be about four catches, about 40, 50 yards. Who knows who's going to get the touchdown pass if Ryan Fitzpatrick gets close enough or be able to throw a touchdown pass in this game. I think this is not going to be easy. It's not going to be pretty. Talk to me, Black.
Yeah, I have the 49ers in the route.
Okay.
A definite route. I have both running backs for San Fran at least scoring a touchdown. Both Frank Gore and my man Ken Ponder there.
Okay. All right, let's move on to the Sunday night game, 3-1 versus 0-4, which is the suspect 3-1. When you beat Oakland, Tennessee, and Kansas City, that is a smoke and mirrors type of 3-1. And they're going to play in New Orleans, where Drew Brees with his coach. With his coaches and GM in attendance by special request because of his possibility of breaking Johnny Unitas' consecutive touchdown games record, I don't think San Diego has a snowball's chance in hell of winning this game. I don't think San Diego is as good as people think they are, or as good as their record is, I should say. They played suspect teams. I don't think I think they're going into a buzzsaw, especially an 0-4 team that really is not an 0-4 team, but you are who you are what your record is. So they're 0-4, but they play quite well at home. Phillip Rivers, I think, is probably going to have to pass his ass off in this game. I don't think it's going to do any good, but I think he's going to pass his ass off in this game. And I think he's going to have to throw for close to 300 yards and a couple touchdowns to be competitive in this game. There's been a dilemma in the running back. Who's the starting running back? North Turner refuses to name who the starting running back is. He said, you'll see when that person goes out in the first offensive series. That's when North Turner says, you'll know who the starting running back is. So Ryan Matthews and Jackie Battle are in a timeshare. They're probably going to get the same amount of touches. So both those guys, especially against the New Orleans rush defense, which is the absolute worst in the league, are viable running back twos in this game. Both of them, because both of them, I think, are going to be getting equal touches in this game. Quite naturally, Ryan Matthews, when he's healthy and holding on to the ball, is the most dynamic of the two. But I see both of these guys getting about the same amount of yardage. And if it comes down to the goal line, I see Battle, not Matthews, getting the goal line touches. So I have Jackie Battle. I can't put him in my lineup because of the two running backs I have in front of him. But if I didn't have one of those running backs, I would definitely put him into my lineup because I think he's going to have at least 60 to 70 yards in this game and a touchdown. And I think Ryan Matthews can do the same thing, 60 to 70 yards and a touchdown. But he'll have to do it from outside the five-yard line. San Antonio Gates is definitely – you got something to say?
No, I was saying when I initially looked at this game, I was thinking the same way you were thinking. I was thinking all those guys coming to see Breeze. I was thinking, oh, this should be a nice win for New Orleans. So, but then my joker sense is kicked in. I said, hold on. New Orleans is on for them. New Orleans just got off of Bounty Gate, Ref Gate, whatever you want to call it. Velma was there on the sidelines, and they lost the rest. I see the New Orleans Saints going 0-5 today. I have Norvell Turner and the San Diego Chargers getting the win in New Orleans. with Bree setting Texas records.
Wow. Okay. San Antonio Gates, I see him getting about 5 catches, about 60 yards, along with Malcolm Floyd getting the same amount, but about 70 yards. I see these two guys getting into the end zone. Okay, so I see both these guys being able to get into the end zone. I think there's going to be a lot of scoring in this game. On the other side, the staple for Drew Brees is at least one touchdown and over 300 yards passing. I think he's going to get at least 2 touchdowns in this game. Don't look for the rushing, running in this game. You got a 3-headed monster: Darren Sproles, Pierre Thomas, Mark Ingram. These guys are probably going to get the same amount of rushing yards. The difference in these guys, I see Darren Sproles getting more receptions and more reception yards. That's what put Darren Sproles above the other two. Jimmy Graham, quite naturally, he's one of the favorite targets for Drew Brees. He's going to get about six to seven catches, about 60 yards, probably within the goal line, within the red zone. He'll get a touchdown. Lance Moore is out. Marcus Colson will probably get about 5 or 6 catches, about 60 yards. Same thing with Marcus Colson. If the touchdown pass within the red zone doesn't go to Jimmy Graham, he looks for Marcus Colson, especially when Lance Moore is not there. You may want to look at this guy because since Lance Moore is not there, this guy is probably going to get some more touches. I'm talking about Joe Morgan. Even though he's questionable knee, I think he may start this game, and I think he may take Moore's spot. If Morgan doesn't start, then that expectation goes to Devery Henderson, even though he's a little bit more inconsistent. Devery Henderson. Yeah, I know. I know.
I've heard that name since 98.
98, okay. Oh, boy. Anyway, okay, let's move on to the Monday night game with my team against my former team.
Oh, boy.
My team, who happens
to
be.
Yeah, you're right. Your team versus your team, but your team, your real team, your 40-year allegiance team.
Stop.
Taking on
Come on,
Texas.
Stop. The real team in Texas, the best team in Texas. I'm glad I got you on here now. This is the best team in Texas right now.
Oh, boy.
Anyway.
I'm telling
anyway.
You, as soon as those New York guys find out where you are in Jersey, there will be a lynching of the master.
Anyway. I like Matt Schaub. And don't expect too much from Matt Schaub, because if Arian Foster can run in this game, you won't get a lot of passing from Matt Schaub. Unfortunately, that's not good for Matt Schaub owners. I'm one of them, and it's not good for Andre Johnson owners, which is black, who happens to own Andre Johnson and think he's more of a fullback versus a wide receiver.
Yeah,
but he's going to have to pass.
He should get the Moose Johnston Award this year as the best fullback in the league.
Well, the mantra for the Houston Texans is run. Unfortunately, but I see Matt Schaub throwing for about 250 yards and at least one touchdown. Hopefully, that one touchdown doesn't go to Owen Daniels; it goes to Andre Johnson. I see Owen Daniels being more or less the second.
How are you just going to say not to Owen Daniels? I have Owen Daniels in the league. That touchdown is going to Owen Daniels.
Okay, well, I didn't know that. What I'm saying is Owen Daniels is like the second passing option. Andre Johnson's first, and it's Owen Daniels. I see him getting about five, six catches, about 50, 60 yards, and it's a strong chance that he'll get it into the end zone along with Andre Johnson, catching about 5 or 6 balls and about 60, 70 yards. This should be easy. I can't pick anybody, and this is the fact, I cannot pick anybody on the Jets side to even think about playing. All I can tell you is this. Sean Green is not what they thought he was. Joe McKnight, they put him back on the offense. He's still not the answer. Below Powell, I'm going, and I told you this people last week, and I'm telling you again this week. If you have a roster spot, if you have a roster spot for a running back on your team, I truly believe this. I read some more on this guy, and I truly believe this guy is going to get a chance somewhere down the road. As long as he's on the active roster, I believe Jonathan Grimes, who the Jets picked up from the Houston Texans practice squad, will get a chance.
You just believe everybody from the Texans squad is just gone.
No. What I'm telling you is this, Black. I heard news of this guy a few weeks ago when they picked him up. They picked him up September 25th, if I'm not mistaken, which was 2 weeks ago, whatever it was. And Houston didn't want to lose this guy, and the Jets picked him up because of the fact they were moving Joe McKnight over to the running back side, and they wanted. They weren't too happy with Sean Green and didn't think Below Powell was that much better than Sean Green. Below Powell is going to be getting more touches. This guy's going to get a shot. They don't think too much of Joe McKnight. Otherwise, Joe McKnight wouldn't be the third running back and wouldn't be pushed over to the defense. So this guy's going to get a shot. I don't know when. This guy's going to get a shot. And he's a little bit more dynamic. He's a little bit more versatile than Sean Green, Joe McKnight, or Below Powell. So I'm not.
I say the same thing about Tebow over Sanchez. Yeah, Sanchez.
Oh, hell no! He can't pass. He cannot pass. We went through this before. You're better off taking their third string quarterback, which they don't have to change the offense radically to do, versus putting Tebow in there, which they have to change the whole offense to be able to have Tebow to be effective.
Tebow's a winner.
Okay. I can't. You know. People have their opinion of Tebow. I understand that. Some people think he's a winner. Okay, he's a winner, but he's not a consistent winner. He may be in the college, but he's not in the pros. Sooner or later, his style of football, which is very basic and easy to defend type of football, it's caught up to him.
Why don't you describe it as how it is? It's winning type of football.
He's basically a running option quarterback, and you can't win with a running option quarterback that has no passing skills. He has no passing skills. His percentage is below Sanchez's in pass completion. That's horrible. I just told you the third string quarterback should play. You can't put Tebow in there because if you do, then you're scrapping your whole offense. Then you're starting from
Greg McElroy. That's what you're saying.
Well, the reason I'm saying this is this: you don't have to completely change the offense. You only have to tailor the offense for what the quarterback is good at, versus completely scrapping the offense you instilled with Tony Sparano, because now Tebow's in it. Now you got to completely turn your offense over to a run option, a read option type of offense, which is completely different than a regular pro-style offense. If you put the third-string quarterback in there, you still keep the same offense, but you have a different quarterback.
If you're going to keep that same offense, which has been doing nothing for the past 4 weeks, I think you would make a switch to Tebow.
Yeah, but the fact remains is it's not the offense, it's the players in the offense. Okay, it's not the offense, it's the players executing in the offense. So if you have a quarterback that's constantly either thrown at your feet, thrown over your head, or thrown in back or in front of you, but not thrown to you, that's not the offense, that's the quarterback. If you have wide receivers that for some reason don't run the right routes or not that good, that's not the offense, that's the players, that's the wide receivers. But if you take the Tim Tebow and put him in it, you're completely scrapping your offense. You're changing your whole offensive philosophy to a read option type of offense, which is the strong suit of Tim Tebow, and it's very predictable, extremely predictable. And you can't play from behind, and you don't have a defense that can keep the other team from scoring. So you're stuck. You're going to be playing from behind quite a bit because you're going to have a lot of three and outs because you're running the ball a lot because he's not able to throw the ball because he's not an accurate passer. Every now and then he does find a nut and find a pass, he completes a pass, but not consistently enough. With a third string quarterback, at least you can keep the same offense. You just have to hope the players that you replaced in the offense can execute. That's my thinking. I know it's a third-string quarterback. I know it's Greg McElroy. I understand that. But because you got Tim Tebow, you put yourself in this dilemma. You can't put him in there because if you do, you're scrapping your whole offense, and now you're really starting from square one with a different offense and players being able to perform in that new offense. That, and it's a hindrance. It's not a benefit. It's a hindrance. The offense is a hindrance. That's my thinking. I don't know if it makes any sense to you or whatever, but that's my thinking.
I just wanted you to talk about your team. That's all.
You know what? It's not my team. I'm just letting you know what I see the Jets' problem is. They're going to get pasted by my team, Houston Texans.
Oh.
So But in order for someone to justify Mark Sanchez being sat down, I don't think the solution is to put Tim Tebow in it. That makes no sense. It makes no sense. I know it's the media hype and the fan favorite, the popularity of Tim Tebow. But if it was a football decision, if in reality you're setting your team back, you're not pushing your team forward. So that's my opinion, and I can't if I was to pick a player on the Jets to play, I wouldn't pick the quarterback quite naturally. I wouldn't pick the running back. I would pick one player, young speedster in here, and that would be Jeremy Curley, because I think he's going to get a lot of. And I don't think Dustin Keller is playing. I think he's out, if I'm not mistaken, I think he's out. Because of his hamstring injury, I would play Jeremy Curley because he's the only one that's really got any kind of big playability in here, and I think that he's going to be the main target for Mark Sanchez, maybe Chaz Schillings, but I think Jeremy Curley is going to probably be the main target because they really don't have anybody else. They lost their best offensive player and they've lost their best defensive player. This is to me, this is, you know what, Black. And this people a lot of people fall into this, and I don't know if you've ever seen this before. When you see a team matchup like this, quite naturally everyone's going to pile up and say, "This is a no-brainer. This is what's going to happen. It's going to be an easy game for the Houston Texans. This is just a sightseeing tour, basically, for the Houston Texans. They're going to come and look at New York and show up." On the field, and the Jets are going to lay down. And this is a classic type of game when you got a team wounded like this, that the Jets come out and play a game that no one ever saw coming. But You ever seen that happen? You've seen that happen before. So, hello?
Yes.
Oh. Anyway. All right, people, that's the end of the show. I have three players that you guys should be looking at this week. New Orleans, if he's healthy, Joe Morgan. In Cleveland, the wide receiver, Joe Gordon. And I think I've neglected to put this guy in here. Donald Brown and the Indianapolis Colts have one of the most favorable running back schedules in fantasy. Okay? Is Donald Brown going to benefit from that, or is it the next player I'm going to give you? Is it going to be Vic Ballard? Just remember that. If you got a spot on your roster that you want to get rid of and speculate, you can put Vic Ballard. They're not too happy with Donald Brown. He's a one-dimensional type of player. Vic Ballard is a little bit better rookie. He's got a little bit more versatility. And Indianapolis has not one of the best. Indianapolis has the best run schedule for fantasy. So just remember that when if you get a chance to do a trade and you have a chance to get Donald Brown, or you have a chance to pick Vic Ballard up off the waiver wire. And you can get Donald Brown probably on the cheap. I would do that. They have, and you may be picking up a running back. He may not be a dynamic running back, but he may be able to get you consistent fantasy points from week to week. All right, Black. Like I said, we're coming to the end of the show. You got any parting shots or parting words of wisdom that you want to spew out before we get out of here?
Yes, just people, if you're setting your lineups today, just remember that every NFL receiver in the game today is greater than Andre Johnson and Dez Bryant. As long as you stick to that mantra, you should have no problems getting wins in your leagues.
Okay. Boy, you really have.
And you, please, I still haven't heard anything about the league. Please tell me you've watched an episode, finally. Yes, no.
No, in fact, the new episode starts, I think it's this week. It starts on Wednesday, I think.
Thursday, 10:30
yes.
p.m.
Yes. No, I haven't watched it. I'm waiting to see it from on Thursday. I haven't watched it.
Oh, you have to catch some of the seasons prior. You have Netflix?
No. Nope, I don't.
Well, make sure you watch Thursday, man. Definitely will love it.
I'm a DVR because I don't know what time to come on. 10:30 is that?
Yeah, 10:30 is the season for me.
Okay, I'll probably DVR because I'll be watching the game. The game won't probably be over until after that. So, anyway, you got anything else you want to spew out here?
That's it. I'm back for vacation. I'll see you guys on Thursday.
All right, my man. You know what? That's why you weren't there. I was wondering why you weren't there, and I just remembered when you said you were on vacation. Well, I hope you enjoyed your vacation, and we'll definitely be looking forward to talking to you on Thursday.
Yes, sir.
With that being said, I'm going to go out like this. 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, Master Plan, JT, that's me, next Sunday. Let's listen to my man. And this is what I want to go out with. See ya.
Our formula is this. We go out, we hit people in the mouth, number one. Number two, we are not a charity. We cannot give them the game. That's number two. And number three is we execute from the very start of the game to the very end of the game. That did not happen. I'm from the old school. I believe this. I would rather play with 10 people and just get penalized all the way until we got to do something else, rather than play with 11 when I know that right now that person is not sold out to be a part of this team. It is more about them than it is about the team. I cannot play with them. Cannot win with them. Cannot coach with them. Can't do it. I want winners. I want people that want to win.